Hi everybody, this is Raj Bago from simpleandpractical.com, and it's a privilege for me to be speaking to Dr. Nasir Ghami, who is a psychiatrist and he's professor of psychiatry at Tufts University School of Medicine and director of the mood disorders program there. He's nationally and internationally known as an expert on the topic of mood disorders. Thank you, Dr. Ghami, for speaking to us.
Nice to be with you, Raj.
So I wanted to ask you about lamotrigine that I've heard you speak about. So, you know, lamotrigine has certain advantages. Say, you know, it doesn't cause weight gain, doesn't cause sexual dysfunction, doesn't require blood levels. So the use of lamotrigine has really increased in the last many years for patients with mood disorders. So what are your thoughts about the efficacy or the limitations of the efficacy of lamotrigine?
Well, lamotrigine is effective long-term in prevention of mood episodes and bipolar illness, but right. It is completely ineffective short-term. It's been studied repeatedly in acute depressive episodes for bipolar illness, depression in unipolar depression, as well as acute mania. And in multiple studies, 7 or 8 of them, it was equivalent to placebo, which means it didn't work.
Right.
And all of those studies are unpublished, and so most people don't know about it. But you have to think about lamotrigine as a drug that does not work immediately or in the next month or two, but it's something you're giving patients for 6 months or a year down the road to prevent future episodes.
So we're really in this for the long haul anyway, with bipolar disorder being a chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that when the person is comes to us when they are currently depressed, mm-hmm. then we shouldn't really be counting on lamotrigine to get them out of the acute episode.
Right, and which doesn't mean you shouldn't give it to them. You give it to them, but don't pretend that it's actually going to help them. You just need to give it to them for the long term. You might use other agents that are effective acutely short term, like some of the dopamine blockers that are effective in bipolar depression or unipolar depression, but not lamotrigine is a short term effect.
What about its efficacy in bipolar 2 disorder? Does it work?
No proven efficacy in bipolar 2 disorder. Not that it doesn't work, but it's only been studied in bipolar type 1. Personally, I don't think there's a difference between type 1 and type 2. I think it's people claim that just because you're using a word, it's like a completely different disease or something. That's not the case. It's just type 2 is a milder version of type 1. They're all part of a bigger illness, manic depression, which even includes unipolar depression. So I think the whole distinction doesn't matter much, but for what it's worth, it's not technically FDA indicated in type 2 and not really studied or proven effective in it.
Okay. There's a little concern, like you were saying, with acute bipolar depression, that the majority of the studies that were done were unpublished.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the clinician, that is a bit of a scary situation, that maybe there are things that we don't know about. Is that true for bipolar 2 disorder also?
Some of the negative studies that were unpublished were in type 2 bipolar. It didn't work in that condition. For the acute depressive episode studied, they had some type 2 patients, and also in rapid cycling it was studied. It was ineffective, equivalent to placebo, in both type 1 and type 2 patients. There was a little hint of maybe some benefit in type 2 patients there, but it was very, very poorly beneficial.
And what about patients who are hypomanic or manic?
Doesn't work for them. It's been shown to be ineffective for manic symptoms acutely in general.
So it's not a topic that's unstudied. It's studied
by the front. These studies all happened. They were funded by Glaxo, the pharmaceutical company.
Yeah.
And the reason I know about it is that they have to give all their data to the FDA.
Yeah.
Positive and negative studies, but they don't have to publish it. So they end up publishing the positive and not the negative studies. There was a legal case where the judge ordered Glaxo to put all its data on the web. And that's how I saw the data. But they actually haven't published most of those studies.
Okay. All right. So now what about the, you know, like one of the concerns about lamotrigine is the issue of Stevens-Johnson syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So can you give us some tips about like what we could do to reduce the risk of Stevens-Johnson syndrome, both in terms of reducing the incidence, but also the medical legally protect ourselves?
Right. Stevens-Johnson syndrome occurs in about 1 in 5,000 people in adults, 1 in 1,000 in kids. Besides age being a risk factor, younger age, higher risk, really the main risk factor is how quickly you dose the drug.
Yes.
The slower you dose the drug, the less risk. The faster the drug is dosed, the higher the risk.
Yes.
And patients need to be told to lay off on this. They should not increase the dose on their own. They should follow instructions from their doctor to the letter. If they can't be reliable like that, they really shouldn't get the medication.
So you have to tell them explicitly, don't increase the dose? You don't think they would just follow like the
titration? Well, no, you could tell them the titration, but basically you should tell them, don't even think about increasing the dose on your own. Because
right.
You know patients sometimes will do that. they may be used to doing that with certain drugs like benzodiazepines. Yes. You know, it's okay, you give them, it's all right. But this is not that kind of drug. It doesn't have any immediate effects, as we've just talked about. And if you increase the dose too rapidly, you increase the risk of this potentially fatal rash. Personally, I think that the FDA dosing recommendations are too fast because they're based on early studies in epilepsy where there is a seizure benefit, whereas there's no depression benefit in bipolar illness or unipolar depression. So there's no need to dose the drug quickly.
Yeah.
So the FDA recommendations are 25 milligrams for 2 weeks, 50 milligrams for 2 weeks, then 100 for a month, then 200.
Right.
So you go from 100 to 200 in a day, which is, I think, completely unreasonable. I suggest 25 milligrams every 2 weeks and forget about it. That's all. So 25 for 2 weeks, 50 for 2 weeks, 75 for 2 weeks, 100 for 2 weeks, 125. And I stop at 100 and I wait usually, at least months, because there's no short-term benefit. You wait and see how much they need. So I would go very slow with this drug.
And then, are there other instructions that you want to give the patients? Like, so this is clearly the most important thing is the rate of titration.
Right. It's the most important thing. The other thing to keep in mind is that if patients have autoimmune diseases, they are at higher risk of Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which is really kind of an autoimmune reaction.
Yeah.
So if they have like Sjogren's syndrome, lupus, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, psoriasis, they're going to be at higher risk. Another factor that's at higher risk, though maybe a little less important, is if they have allergies to other medications, rashes to antibiotics and other drugs.
Yeah.
All that puts them at higher risk. In those cases, you know, I would keep the titration slow. I would warn the patient more. I'd be on more of a lookout for a rash if they had, say, antibiotic allergies. Not a reason not to give it, but a reason to be very careful about it. If they have autoimmune diseases, I would recommend not giving the medication at all. I think the risk is too high.
So in patients who have autoimmune diseases like psoriasis and Sjogren's syndrome, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, you would say it is best to avoid lamotrigine?
I think it is. I think it should be
not possible.
If it possible. I think it should be a last resort in those cases. Now that's not to say that some people can take it and not have a problem. I've seen it. But I think it should be a later resort and certainly not an early drug in those cases.
Right. Now what should we do to medico-legally to protect ourselves when prescribing lamotrigine? Because even though thankfully the Stevens-Johnson is rare, but okay, you know, once in a while, like some of our patients might be unlucky.
Yep.
Are there particular things that we should do from the medical legal perspective?
Well, I think one should follow the clinical guidelines we just talked about, the slow titration, avoiding it in autoimmune cases, paying attention to drug allergies. And then legally otherwise, the key thing is whenever you prescribe lamotrigine to write down patient informed about potentially fatal SJS, something like that, just to show that you talked about it with the patient.
So I think that I just want to emphasize for our audience the subtle point that you're making, very important, is that not only that you told them about Stevens-Johnson syndrome, but that you told them that Stevens-Johnson syndrome is potentially fatal.
I think that's a good point to make. I would at least say SJS for Stevens-Johnson syndrome, but if they can put in potentially fatal, it's better. Certainly, it's much better than if you said there's a rash. The patient might have a rash. Because if the patient does have SJS, and certainly, God forbid, they get a second-degree burn or fatality,
right,
they could argue that a rash was not sufficient consent.
Right.
So I think you need to be more clear than that.
Right. And then what should we tell them, like, you know, in case they have a rash? So what exactly do you tell your patients?
Yeah.
Like if they develop a rash.
So what I tell patients is there are two things with lamotrigine. One is a non-serious rash, which is actually relatively common. Happens in about 5% of people with standard titration. I think less with the slow titration. And then there's a serious rash, which can be potentially fatal, Stevens-Johnson syndrome type effect. So I tell people not to overreact if they get a rash, but just to stop the drug and then call me. And I don't, you know, the general recommendation is not to continue with medication at that point. Some people think, well, it's not serious, it's not Stevens-Johnson, we can resume it. And that's true in over 99% of cases, it's not going to be Stevens-Johnson. But you don't know who the cases are going to be where it might be that. I think it's safer just to stop the medication if the patient gets any rash, even though it's non-serious in the vast majority of cases, so that you can avoid the few serious cases.
And then last question, so then if you do end up stopping the rash, stopping the medication due to occurrence of a rash, or the patient stops the medication for some other reason for a few days, then should they restart at the full dose, or how would you restart the medication if it turns out that it was a false alarm?
If it was a false alarm, or sometimes people go on vacation, they forget the medication. The key is I think that once you get past 2 or 3 days, you have to start from scratch. Certainly when you get to a week, you need to start at 25 milligrams every 2 weeks again. I think it's too risky to try to go faster.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Ghami, for giving us some very valuable practical tips.
Thanks.